Hey, the week before last, I think it was, Deanna, my wife, was looking at our credit card statement online. And I usually take care of all that stuff. It's very rare that she looks at that. And she was looking at it, and she found something. She caught me. Yeah, shame on me, yep. What she found were fees. She looked back a couple of months, and they had charged us an annual fee and a second card holder fee and a rewards points fee. And she was surprised. And she came to me and said, "What's up with all these fees?" So I'm like, "Oh, I'm in trouble or something here, you know?" And the long and short of the story is, and here's a public service announcement for you, I called the bank. And I said, "Hey, we don't like these fees." And I said, "What do you want us to do?" And I said, "Well, I want you to get rid of the fees." And they got rid of the fees. So you can actually do that, okay? If you got credit card fees, call your bank, tell them I said, and they'll get rid of your fees. And our marriage is all fine now. So, she wasn't impressed that we had a credit card that had fees. Anyway, you ever look at things like that, and things like your gas bill and your power bill, and you think, how does all this work? Do I really understand all these fees and charges and what it actually costs, how they put it all together? So what about your phone bill, your mobile phone bill, and how much data you use and how many calls you made and how many texts and how many, all those other things, and when you go over and all that kind of thing, right? No? Yep. Do you really understand it all? No, you don't, because they don't want you to, all right? And this is a message about the man tonight, and we're going to stick it to the, no, it's not. You know, when we look at doing something, buying something, making an investment somewhere of our time or our energy or whatever, we don't always fully understand the cost of it. How many pet owners? Yeah, yeah. And when you took that puppy home, he was all cute and cuddly, and he was free, right? Because somebody else knew how much it really cost, and they were giving it to you. And how many of you have had kids? How many of you are kids? You are expensive, all right? Statistics tell us it takes in Australia about $275,000, $280,000 to raise a kid today. You got five. Oh, wow, 1.25 million. Anyway, and that's before you educate them, all right? And if you send them, if you don't love your kids very much and you send them to a state school, then that's going to cost you about $60,000 over their lifetime. If you love them a little bit more and you send them to a private school, I'm not going to tell you what statistics say because some of you kids would not be in private school tomorrow. But anyway, you can Google it. You can find out, parents. But anyway, it is astronomical, the cost. And most of the time, we don't look at all these costs up front, because if we did, we'd say, no way. How much are you paying for your mortgage, right? Right? You paid $400,000 for your house, right? Or five or whatever it is. No, you probably paid close to $1 million for that house by the time you're done. We don't evaluate the cost like that normally. Often, with some things, we're not even concerned about the cost because we look at something and that is so valuable to us. Maybe it's a relationship, things like that. If we don't care what it costs, we're going to be all in that space. We are in a series right now called Believe. If you're joining us tonight for the first time or you haven't been around much, we've been going through the book of John, and John was one of Jesus' closest friends. When Jesus spent time on the earth, John and him hung out a lot, and John got to know him really well, and he called himself the disciple that Jesus loved, so he felt he had a special place there. And John, after he spent all this time with Jesus, he wrote down a lot of the stuff that happened in Jesus' life, all of his experiences and things he observed, and we call that the Gospel of John. So we've been going through that. Today we're going to be up to chapter 12, and what we're going to learn in chapter 12 is that Jesus doesn't hold back on telling us what it cost to believe in him. Jesus doesn't hold back on the cost of following him. In John 12, we see the beginning of the end. It's often referred to as Passion Week, where it starts. And I want to give you a bit of an overview before we start looking at all these cost things. But Jesus, there's a couple things going on here. Jesus is making it very clear that his time is up, that his time is drawing to an end. In verse 8, he says that Mary anointed him for his burial. You won't have me around much longer. In verse 35, he says, walk in the light while you still have the light around. Implication, I'm not going to be around much longer. Verse 24, he talks about a kernel of wheat dying and producing many new kernels. He was talking about his own death. We'll get there in a few minutes. And then verse 32, he says, when I'm lifted up, I will draw everyone to me. Talking about his death on the cross. So Jesus is making a point to say, I'm not going to be around much longer. My time is almost up on this earth. Now, while he's doing that all through this chapter, you also see many people beginning to follow Jesus. Jesus is getting lots of followers, and that is frustrating the Jewish leaders. Now, you've seen the Jewish leaders, if you've been around for a while, you've seen them frustrated a lot most of the time. In verse 9, we see people flocking to see Jesus because, if you remember 2 weeks ago, when Justin was preaching, he told us that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. That got people's attention. People were following Jesus already a little bit and everything, but that one, you're raising a dead guy to life. That got everybody's attention. Jesus' followers are increasing. And then verse 10 and 11, the Jewish leaders saw that, and they decided, we need to kill Lazarus. Now, you need to understand, the reason they wanted to kill Lazarus is because the Jewish leaders, most of them were Sadducees. The Sadducees was a sect of the Jews that did not believe in the resurrection. All right? That's why they're so sad, you see. Right? Yeah. So they thought, if we kill Lazarus, we can destroy the evidence that the resurrection was real. And less people will start following because Jesus raised him from the dead. Then in verses 12 to 19, we see what's known as the triumphal entry. I call it the not-so-triumphant entry because the way it ended. But many people were shouting, Hosanna, welcoming Jesus into town, largely because he's the guy that raised Lazarus from the dead. And the Pharisees looked around at that and they said, what can we do? Everyone is going to him. So they are a frustrated bunch of guys right now. And that's where we're going to pick up the text today. Those are some very broad brush strokes. Today, though, we're going to focus in on three different sections of this passage that are going to tell us the cost of believing. Starting in verse 1, it says, 6 days before the Passover celebration began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him. Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. So we look at that. We look at that event, and we're going to unpack it a little bit. But what we really need to understand is that following Jesus means sacrificing stuff. Following Jesus means sacrificing stuff. We're talking about the cost. What does it cost? Well, it's going to cost some stuff. So they're on the way to the Passover celebration, and they stopped off in Bethany. It's 6 days before the Passover, and I reckon the reason they stopped in Bethany was because Jesus was a marked man. There was a price on his head. If you look back at chapter 11, verse 57, the Jewish leader said, hey, somebody bring us Jesus. If anybody sees Jesus, tell us where he is so we can come arrest him. We're done. It's over. So he's stopping on the way to Jerusalem at Bethany, having dinner with his friend Lazarus, the guy he raised from the dead. By the way, that's further evidence Lazarus was really alive because dead people don't eat, right? Cool. Now, Martha, you're going to be shocked. Did you see what Martha was doing? Serving. Is that a surprise? Of course not. If you know anything about Mary and Martha, Martha was the one that was always busy about everything and then complaining about Mary and stuff. Well, Martha was serving as she was accustomed to doing. Then Mary took this bottle of expensive perfume and anointed Jesus' feet with it and then started washing his feet off with her hair. What that tells us about Mary is that she didn't care a bit about what people think. She was not concerned at all about what people think about her. Because two things. One, she let down her hair and was rubbing his feet with her hair. Women should not have been letting down their hair, all right? That would have been a social faux pas. It would have been socially unacceptable. They would have thought she was not a very nice kind of woman because she's doing that kind of thing, all right? But Mary was not that kind of woman. But she just loved Jesus and was extravagantly lavishing him with her love. The other thing that shows us she didn't care what people thought is she used that bottle of perfume that was a year's worth of wages to anoint his feet, and actually he probably anointed his whole body, his head and everything, because 12 ounces, that's a lot of perfume just for your feet. Justin's feet, I held his shoe this morning. He could probably use 12 ounces, but anyway, he held my shoe too, but I got there first, so how's that? Hey, so anyway, Mary's act was very extravagant. It was an amazingly generous gift. Like I said, it was a year worth a year's wages. Can you imagine? I don't know what you make in a year, but can you imagine spending that much money on a bottle of perfume? Yeah. If you're going to do that, come talk to me first. All right? We need to have a serious discussion about your stewardship. All right? And I've got some other plans for your money. But anyway. So, hey. So, Mary gave that gift, and that was a huge sacrifice. Maybe she had saved it up all her life. Maybe it was a family heirloom. We don't really know, but it was a huge sacrifice. But there's another guy in the room, one of the disciples called Judas, who was not impressed with the scene, the scenario. He didn't like it, and he thought that huge sacrifice was a huge waste. He said, that should not be happening. We should give that money to the poor, all right? So that actually makes a little bit of sense. I actually could hear myself saying that. If I saw you wasting a year's wages on a bottle of perfume, I'm going to say, let's give that money to the poor. I would be along with Judas there. But we found out something else in the text there. Did you see that? Judas wasn't really concerned about the poor. That wasn't his motive. He wanted the money for himself. He was a thief. And it's really, really interesting to understand the scenario here, because Judas was in charge of the money. Who's going to put a crook in charge of your money? Yeah, you're not going to put a criminal in charge of your money, a thief in charge of your money. Judas wouldn't have been known as a thief at the moment. He would have been trusted. And he would have been seen as the guy with the financial acumen and abilities and skills. He would have been seen as the bookkeeper, finance manager kind of guy. He would have been Carly, right, for our church. You know, that would have been Judas. Hey, don't you be taking the money now, okay? All right? Give it to the poor at least. But anyway. This is a caution for you and I. Because the very thing that Judas was trusted with, that he was good at, that he had abilities around, was where he was tempted. Yep. Often Satan is going to come to us right where we're gifted, where we're ministering, where we're good at something, and he's going to use that against us and try to tempt us to use that for evil. See, in this account, we see Martha serving, okay? That's who she is. That's very characteristic of her. Mary was who she was, extravagantly loving Jesus. And Judas, on the other hand, was self-serving. What we learn here is that we will all have the opportunity to use who we are and what we have for good or evil, okay? God's made you a certain way. God's given you certain things, and you get to choose how you're going to use those things. You're going to use them for good, or you're going to use them for evil. Whether it's money, maybe it's intelligence or beauty or talent. Maybe you're in a position that's powerful and you've got some influence. You can use that for good, or you can use that for evil. You can use who you are and what you have to serve Jesus or serve yourself. You can use who you are and what you have to help others or to hurt others. That's why around the world you've got corrupt governments and leaders who are using their influence and their power and their position to marginalize whole countries and nations of people while they line their pockets and things like that. We can use who we are and what we have for good or evil. Jesus then chimes in. Okay, Mary's anointing his feet. Judas doesn't like it. Well, now we've got a conflict brewing. Jesus steps in. It says in verse 7, Jesus replied, "Leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." Jesus accepts her gift and what she's doing. And then he called out Judas right there in front of everyone. And he told Judas, "Leave her alone. I'm actually liking what she's doing. What she's doing is a good thing." He says, "You're always going to have the poor." Now, when he said that, was he saying that giving money to the poor is not important? No, it's not what he's saying at all. In fact, his emphasis is the poor are going to be here all the time. You need to help the poor every day. I'm here right now. This opportunity is now. See, Mary did what she could while she could. She can feed the poor and help the poor later. But right now, there's an opportunity that's never going to present itself again. Jesus is there in the moment. And that's what he's teaching there. Do it while you can. In verse 36, Jesus is teaching and he's telling them, inviting them again to believe in him. He says, put your trust in the light while there is still time. It's the same principle. He says, while there's still time, follow me. While there's still time, believe in me. Because there's not always going to be time. And if you're here tonight, if you're one of those people who are on that fence, you're on that edge, you're not sure about Jesus, and you've thought about following him, but you just haven't crossed that line yet, can I just encourage you? You don't know how long you have. You may not make it home tonight. And I don't want to scare you or anything like that, but don't put off the decision. Follow Jesus while you still can. Because one day, it's going to be too late. Thinking about sacrificing stuff, when I was younger, which was a long time ago, I wanted stuff. I had financial goals. I had dreams. I had it all planned out. I was going to have, you know, the house with the white picket fence and 2.4 kids. And now it's four kids and all that. Anyway, and all the stuff, nice, fancy cars and all of this. And I was fast tracking. I was actually doing well in the IT industry. It was when the IT industry was really young, and your PCs were, we had XT, AT, and then a 386. Anybody remember that? Yeah, wow, that's just nuts. I actually remember changing out somebody's 20 gigabyte hard drive, 20 gigs, to a 40. And I told them, you will never need more space than that. Now you have more RAM than that. Anyway, that's not the story here. Anyway, I was doing all right in that industry. Started making a little bit of money, and I could see the career pathway was very bright. Okay, I wasn't making lots of money yet or anything, but the pathway was there. It was very clear. But I started to realize that as I was climbing that ladder and trying to do all those things, it actually wasn't doing what I thought it was going to do for me. It wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't bringing joy, peace, happiness, and all those things. And at the same time, I started getting more involved in my local church, and I started getting a little more serious about my relationship with Jesus. And the more serious I got about following Jesus, the more I realized something. This is probably going to end up costing me. Because I could feel it in here. It's like, oh. Yeah, just chasing after money and dreams and all that kind of thing. That's not what it's all about. So I had to make a decision. I had to be confronted with this idea of sacrificing stuff. I realized that that was okay. So I started spending more money on ministry. I started giving more to the local church and started supporting missionaries. Felt called into full-time ministry. And then I knew, okay, that's going to cost. So it was cool when I could make more money to be just giving money. That's all right. But then I'm going to go to full-time ministry. And that means I'm not going to make as much money. And that means it's going to cost me money to go to Bible college. I tell you all that not to say, oh, look what I did or anything. I'm telling you that to tell you I was confronted with this whole idea of sacrificing stuff. And it wasn't that easy. And I actually had pastors confronting me and saying, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to go into ministry? I was like, aren't you the one supposed to be telling me I should do this kind of stuff? It was crazy. But you know, when we get serious about following Jesus, we have a different view of money and stuff. We set aside our accumulation of wealth, and we become more generous in our giving and less concerned about amassing our own fortunes. At least that's my experience, and most of the people that I've talked to that have been that journey. When we follow Jesus more closely, more seriously, our opinion about those things change. For some of you, it's time to consider whether or not you're following Jesus with your finances and your stuff. You may be saying, one day when I get all this sorted out, then I'll start giving to this, or I'll support that missionary or that ministry, or I'll give to the building fund or the church, or I'll do this and that, or I'll go to Bible college because I really want to ditch this job I've got anyway. I believe God's called me in ministry. And I'll do all that one day when this is all sorted out perfectly. And that may be okay. But it could be the opportunities now. It could be like Mary with Jesus, the opportunity's right there in front of you now, and you have to take it now. Mary did what she could while she could, when the opportunity was there. The next section of chapter 12 talks about Jesus coming into Jerusalem. I mentioned it before, the triumphal entry. He's riding in on a donkey. And to set the scene, there's all kinds of numbers estimated, but some people say that on the high end, there'd have been about 2.7 million people there in Jerusalem for the Passover. Some people say it's only about 500,000. Either way, it's a lot of people, all right? And Jesus is a wanted man, and he's riding a donkey down the center of the road, downtown, coming into Jerusalem. I think if I was Jesus, and if I'm going to go to Passover, which I'm probably thinking, I might give that a miss because the Jewish leaders don't like me anyway, but if I'm going to go, I'm going to say, wow, if there's a million people, 500,000, I don't care. I'm going to kind of mingle in the crowd, get lost in the crowd, get behind the big guys and stuff, and just kind of go incognito, maybe wear a mask or a hat or something like that. But Jesus didn't do that. So that's the scene. He's coming in, and he didn't hide from the crowd, came right down through the streets. And then in verse 20, very significant few verses, says some Greeks who had come to Jerusalem for the Passover celebration paid a visit to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee. They said, "Sir, we want to meet Jesus." Philip told Andrew about it, and they went together to ask Jesus. It's very significant that John inserts this right here and thinks it's important enough for us to know about this, because what he's showing here is that the Jews have been rejecting Jesus. Now the Greeks, Gentiles, okay, the door's going to open for them to receive Jesus, to follow Jesus. And this seems to have been some kind of a trigger, because when Andrew and Philip went and asked Jesus, they said, "Hey, these Gentiles are here, these Greeks are here, and they want to see you." Look at what verse 23 says. They said, "Jesus, these guys want to see you." Jesus replied, "Now the time has come for the Son of Man to enter his glory. You want to see us or not? Do we get to see you or not, Jesus?" There was a trigger. Three times before this in John's gospel, Jesus says, "My hour has not come. My time has not come." And when they asked to see him, he said, "My hour has come. It's time for the Son of Man to enter into his glory." Now, think about Jesus' followers. Okay, they've been following him around, and they want him to take control. They want him to be the leader of the future. That would have been an exciting statement. "Now the time has come for the Son of Man to enter into his glory." All right? He's standing there. If you were his speechwriter, you'd have thought, he nailed that first line. Way to go. You're inspiring everyone. They're going to be on board. And then Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat is planted in the soil and dies, it remains alone. But its death will produce many new kernels, a plentiful harvest of new lives." If I'm a speechwriter, I'm saying, "Jesus, you're going off script. That makes no sense, Jesus. You did well. That first line was great. You had everybody. My time has come. What's this about a kernel being planted in the soil and dying? Come on." Jesus was explaining his own death was imminent, and that his death would bring life. There's no new life without death, is what Jesus wanted them to understand by that. They would have been confused by that for sure. And then while they were waiting for the revolution to happen, again, he didn't say there's a revolution, he just says, "My time has come." And they thought, revolution's happening. This kernel thing, we don't understand about the dying thing and all that. But then he said, "Those who love their life in this world will lose it. Those who care nothing for their life in this world will keep it for eternity. Anyone who wants to serve me must follow me, because my servants must be where I am, and the Father will honor anyone who serves me." Okay, you're Jesus' followers. You think he's getting ready to start the revolution. He's taking over and everything. And then he says, "And you're going to die because you love your life. But if you don't care about your life too much, then you'll be good for eternity." Would that have made sense to them? Probably not completely. It's amazing, though, because what Jesus is saying is those who love their life are going to lose it. Those who care nothing for their life will keep it for eternity. I love that verse. In fact, I think that's my new life verse, the part that says if you don't care for your life, then you can have it for eternity. That means I don't have to exercise or eat right. I don't have to care about this life, my life, at all. Anyway, that's not true. You need to exercise and eat right. Following Jesus means sacrificing life. We saw it means sacrificing stuff. It means sacrificing life. The obvious implication here is literally sacrificing of our very life. Most of us are not going to be called to that extreme of a commitment to Jesus. But looking at this verse, it's talking about our attitude towards our life. Do we love our life so much that we're not willing to risk, that we're not willing to go beyond the safety zones for Jesus? While it applies literally, I think it also makes a lot of sense figuratively if you think about loving our life, our lifestyle, the way we live, the things we have, the place we live, and all those things. The question in my mind would be, if we love our life, the life that we've made and built and all that, too much, how much room is there for God to change that if he wants to? If we love our life that much. What if Jesus called you to literally sacrifice your life? He called you to go serve somewhere that is hostile towards Christianity and you knew it might cost you your life. How would you feel about that? Some of you would do it, I know that. Some of you, I know, wouldn't. What if Jesus didn't ask you to give your life literally, but he asked you to give up the life that you have for the life he wants you to have? What would you do? Some of you wrestle with that on the inside already. In fact, when I just said that, you resonated with that and you thought, wow, I know there's something in here that says Jesus has something different for me than what I'm doing today. Are you willing to sacrifice your life? Jesus' perspective on this life, verse 27, he said, should I pray, Father, save me from this hour? Okay, he's talking about his impending death. He said, should I pray to the Father and ask him to save me from it? Because humanly speaking, I don't want to go to the cross. I don't want to get beat. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to die. And he could have said, no, I'm not going to do it. But he knew something. He understood something. In verse 27, he said, but this is the very reason I came. He understood his purpose. And that wasn't fun and roses and all that. That was death on a cross. So Jesus said, hey, I could certainly pray and say, take this away from me. I don't want to do this. But then that's the reason I came. Why would I do that? We need to take note here. Have you ever thought about why you're here? Have you ever thought about when life's not going the way you planned and the way you wanted and you don't have all the ducks in a row the way you want them or your dreams aren't coming true and things are getting complicated? Have you ever thought, especially if you're following Jesus closely, okay, well, it's not what I thought, but he's got me right here in this season for a reason. He's got me here now for a purpose. Maybe you're following Jesus, but because things aren't going the way you wanted your life to play out, you're about ready to throw in the towel and say, yeah, it's not what I signed up for. I'm not going to be all in anymore. The question then would be, are you loving your life more than you should? Are you loving your life that you've created more than the life God wants to create for you? Maybe it's difficult to kind of understand this whole thing about sacrificing your life. Paul, and one of the apostles, he wrote about half the New Testament, or over half of it, and he wrote a letter to a group of believers in Rome, and it says this in chapter 12. So, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he's done for you. Let them be living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of the world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. See, giving your life is a living sacrifice. That's not talking about dying. That's talking about living. Living sacrificially, living for God instead of yourself. The way you live should show that you're a follower of Jesus. He says, don't act like the world around you. Let God change your thinking, and then that's going to change your behavior. And you're going to have a different view on life, and you're going to want His purposes instead of your purposes. In fact, those your purposes are going to become His purposes because you're giving your life as a living sacrifice to Him. So we need to sacrifice stuff. We need to sacrifice life. Look at verse 37. It says, despite all the miraculous signs Jesus had done, most of the people still did not believe. Now that's a really sad commentary because all the evidence was there. People still didn't believe. That happens here today. All the evidence is out there for us, and there's still people that don't believe. But then in verse 42, after it said most of them didn't, it says many people did believe in Him, however, including some of the Jewish leaders. But they wouldn't admit it for fear that the Pharisees would expel them from the synagogue, for they loved human praise more than the praise of God. So many did believe. It sounds like things are hopeful, but then it said they determined they wanted to be secret believers. We can't let anyone know that we actually really believe this, because they were afraid of the Pharisees. They were afraid they were going to get thrown out of the synagogue and excommunicated. They were afraid of the social implications and the political suicide that they would be committing if they said, yep, we're followers of Jesus. And the bottom line, it says, is they loved human praise more than the praise of God. They were addicted to popularity. When they threw up something on Instagram or Facebook, they were checking it every 30 seconds to see how many more likes they had. Right. They didn't have Instagram and Facebook, okay? Just in case you're wondering, that's a new thing in your generation, all right? But that's how they felt. They craved attention, popularity, and all those things. They wanted immediate gratification from people rather than doing what would please God. What we learn there is following Jesus means sacrificing praise. We need to sacrifice praise. Far too often, we are far too concerned about what people think and not concerned enough about what God thinks. We want to be followers of Jesus, but sometimes we don't want to wear it on a t-shirt. We don't want everybody to know it. And our life doesn't necessarily want to reflect it that much because we're afraid. When I saw that the Jews were afraid of the Pharisees, the Jewish believers there were afraid of the Pharisees, and they were afraid of getting kicked out of the synagogue, I thought, what are we afraid of? Why is it that we will keep our Christianity on the down low? Why would I have went into Jerusalem hiding in the crowd instead of riding on a donkey? Well, I think it's because we're probably afraid of maybe getting kicked out of our social circles. Maybe we're afraid of losing a friend or not being liked by people, those kinds of things. You know what fear is? You might want to write this one down, okay? Fear is negative faith. Think about it. If you have a fear, you have faith. You have faith that something in the future is going to go horribly wrong. You believe that about the future. That's faith. For those of you that might be here tonight and you say, hey, I'm not into this whole faith thing. I don't have faith in Jesus. I don't want to have faith in God and all that. If you've ever been afraid, you've had faith. Fear is faith that the future is going to go poorly. It's misplaced faith. And studies show us something. 85%, there was a study done, the Huffington Post printed this. 85% of what people worry about never happens. 85%. Think about all the things you're worrying about right now while I'm talking about fear and worry. 85% of whatever you're thinking about right now is not going to happen. And then of that 15% that does happen, what you're going to find out is that you can handle it better than you expected, or it's going to teach you a life lesson that's worth learning. And you know what the bottom line of all of that together means? It means 97% of the stuff you're afraid of never eventuates the way you think it's going to. 97%. So what are you afraid of? Come on. We don't want to live in fear. It's probably not going to happen anyway. You might be afraid I'm never going to shut up tonight, right? It's getting late. That's never going to happen either, right? This fear of what people think is a massive thing in our lives. And even though 97% of it isn't really going to happen that way, we're still gripped by it, the fear of what people think. And I think that's because, by and large, we're really insecure. Most people, most of us are very insecure. And you may look at some people and say, wow, there's no way they're insecure. They're bigger than life, larger than life, and they have all the confidence in the world. That's probably the most insecure person you know, because they're compensating for that, and they're trying to convince you that they're confident and secure. We all feel like we don't measure up sometimes, but we all need affirmation. We all want to feel appreciated. We all want people to say good stuff about us and things. And that's not all bad. Jesus even tells us that we need to encourage one another, and that's why we have, as part of our mission, is that we're striving to be a loving community, because we want to affirm people. We want to love on people, make sure everybody knows that they're valuable. But while we are doing that, we need to be careful that we are not sacrificing the praise of God for the praise of people. Following Jesus costs heaps. Question that we need to ask tonight is, if it's not costing you anything, how closely are you following? I confronted myself with that question this week as I was preparing this even. It's like, wow, what's it costing me these days? How closely am I following these days? Do you love Jesus more than stuff? When's the last time you sacrificed something for him? Giving to his work, the church, mission. Are you using who you are and what you have for good or for evil? What opportunities in front of you right now that may not be there next week? Do you love Jesus more than stuff? Do you love Jesus more than life? What is it about your life that when you look at it, you say, you know what? That one part of my life, actually, I love that too much to surrender that to Jesus. What is that? Is there anything in your life for that? Is it your career, your job? Is it your family? The relationship that you're in? Do you love Jesus more than praise? If it didn't matter what people thought, what would you be willing to sacrifice? If it didn't matter who got the credit, what would you be willing to do? And if you had as much faith in Jesus as you have fear about what might happen, how would that change your life? Now, if you're like me, you might be sitting there thinking, Stan, you've told us that it costs heaps to follow Jesus tonight. Our stuff, our life, praise, relationships, friendships, whatever, accolades, all those kinds of things. Why in the world would I want to follow Jesus if it's going to cost me that much? Like, why would I buy the puppy if I know what the vet bill is going to be? Why would I have a kid if I know what that bill, you know? Why would I follow Jesus now that I know what it cost? Jesus sacrificed everything for you. That's why. Because he loved you. And as much as you, we're talking about you sacrificing to follow him, the alternative is rejecting his sacrifice for you and not having an eternal relationship with God. And friends, that is worth any sacrifice that you could be called to make now. And the other reason, it's not just because Jesus sacrificed everything for you, it's because this life is temporary. You may live to be 70, 80, 90, even 100 years old. I think we had somebody that was 100 in the service this morning, or over 100. Even if you live to be 100, it's a drop in the bucket compared to eternity. This life is temporary. And when this life is over, all the stuff, all the life you've lived, and all the praise you've gotten, they'll praise you at your funeral too, okay? But then it's over. There was an English cricketer turned missionary called C.T. Studd. He wrote a long poem, and I'm going to give you one stanza of it. He said this, "Only one life, a few brief years, each with its burdens, hopes, and fears, each with its clays I must fulfill, living for self or in his will. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Friends, think about life with a view of eternity, not today. Father, thank you so much for your word. I thank you for Jesus revealing cost. Lord, he regularly does that. He regularly throughout the Gospels tells us that it costs us our life. It costs us family. It costs us relationships to follow him. Thank you for not hiding that. Lord, I thank you that you made it clear that it's not a, if we vote for Jesus, then we get to be healthy and wealthy the rest of our lives. You said just the opposite. But Lord, when we evaluate the cost and the sacrifice, Lord, I just want to thank you for the sacrifice you made in giving us Jesus so we can have a relationship with you, so that we can live in this life in a way that's going to bring glory to you and bring others along that journey too. Lord, help us to have eternity in mind rather than just this moment, this 100-year moment that we live in. Help us to live our lives today for eternity. In Jesus' name, amen.